This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Welcome back. We're at the top of the hour, Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. We are live at the Beacon Building. We're in 814 Elm Street, right in downtown Manchester. And we are now in studio with Brad Sturl, the CEO and owner of Rustic Crust Pizza. Very nice to meet you, and glad that you're here at Food for Thought.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
But I kind of expected you'd be wearing something different because you are, after all, a superhero known as the Crust Crusader. Right?
That's Crust Crusader?
Yes.
I left the cape in the car.
Oh, darn. Yeah, it's a little bit warm for that today, huh? Well, we joke, but Brad is the founder and CEO, president of Rustic Crust out of Pittsfield, and they are the market leader for organic and all-natural pizza crusts. And I don't know if I would call the devastating fire that you had in March a year ago as a blessing in disguise, but I'm guessing some good things came out of that.
Yeah, in the end of it, we ended up with a brand-new facility, which we were in need of. It allows us to get into making a lot of new products this year, so... After the fire is all said and done, it's turned out okay in the sense we have a brand new building.
Right. But it was worth the blood, sweat, and tears, I'm sure.
Yes, it was. It was great for the employees. Everything turned out well in the end.
Well, it turned out well for the employees because essentially you kept everybody on when, you know, in some cases, some employers or business owners would have said, you know, there's money not coming in. You got to sit out for a month, which in many cases would be devastating for a lot of people.
Yeah, a lot of our employees live paycheck to paycheck. It was really important to keep them involved. Every one of them got paid 100% the whole time we were rebuilding. And since that time, I think we've added another 45 people on top of that.
Wow.
So business has increased that much, or it's been that good?
We've been steadily growing year over year for the last 5 years, and it really ended up, it just never stopped. So we did lose some business due to the fire, but you know, we've just continued that growth.
I would guess all the good press and the good reviews certainly helped bring, you know, that visibility back. And didn't the state give you a nice resolution or some kind of a commendation? I mean, it was like official Rustic Crust Day or something like that.
Yeah, we received a House resolution. They presented it to us on the floor. We've had a lot of support from the state at all different levels of the government.
So I like watching. You make videos now. How do you like being on camera making the how to make pizza videos?
It's fun. I like to cook. I've been cooking products since I was just a kid. But it is fun doing the videos.
So tell me a little bit more about these videos.
So one of the things we do is to educate people on how to use our products. We've done a lot of cooking videos where I'll make our products in different settings, such eat from grilling pizza is one we talked about just a little bit ago. We've done dessert pizzas. We'll do kind of unique topped pizzas, everything from shrimp scampi to things even with arugula into the average everyday, just kind of tomato sauce and cheese, just to show you how to do it.
You know, when you think about it with pizza, you really can pretty much be so creative with it. I mean, you really, you know, and really breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or dessert, like you said.
We always looked at it as kind of an edible plate. So almost anything you think of in the fridge.
I like that.
You can put it on there. It's a great way when my wife kind of goes crazy. She'll say there's nothing at home for dinner.
No. You know?
And so I'll look in the refrigerator. I'll come out, and I said, there's always something in there you can eat.
Now, hold on. Now, at your household for dinner, do you have rustic crust at your house?
Yeah, we eat rustic crust. We eat pizza more than you would think.
So you do still,
but
okay.
We still, I enjoy cooking, so, but it's always something different we try to do.
So do you, in Australia, I think eggs on pizza is a very popular way to go. I've not seen, you see a little bit in this country, but it hasn't caught on the way it has down under.
It's not as popular here, but we have done it in the past. Mm-hmm. We've done everything from eggs with asparagus and prosciutto. Mm. We've done a scrambled egg pizza at different times. So there are some different ways you can do it.
Now you find it fun, though, to go to the fridge, as your wife might say, there's nothing to eat. And then you find stuff that's been sitting there for a couple days. It's just like, no, for me, pizza making is like snowflakes.
Yeah, you do that.
No two are alike, and it's a good way to clean out the fridge and expose yourself to something different.
Yeah, because you can go to the drawer. A lot of people have this drawer full of cheese pieces.
Yeah. Right? Right. Yes.
So you can almost take all those and put them together. Then you start looking at the vegetables. You say, okay, what do I have? I have arugula. I have tomatoes or onion. So that's it. You can kind of make anything that's in your refrigerator. If it's edible, it can go on a pizza.
And for those, you know, that would like to try something a little different, if they haven't tried Rustic Crust, you know, it's so much faster and easier, because I'm a bread dough making guy. So I get yelled at because I make six at a time and freeze them. And Barb says, is there any pizza dough in the fridge? And I say, no, I got to make some more. And so now this is the go-to for me.
And it's very good.
Yeah.
It's delicious. It's all seasoned. And how many different crusts do you have?
We have 7 different flavors right now. And they range all the way from a really thin crust to our ciabatta, which is one of our newer items. It's a little bit of a thicker crust. Then we top it with some sea salt and basil. Mm. But we have a couple organic flavors. We even have a gluten-free option.
I had the, it was a whole wheat one, I believe.
Yes, yeah. We have one that's 100% whole wheat. And we have another one that's a mix with whole wheat and different grains.
It was delicious. Very good. And I had the sauce and the cheese and the whole bit. So,
very good.
Yeah. All right. So here, you're a guy, you own some pizza stores, Foodies, that people will remember. Maybe didn't realize that that was part of your past life. And you divest yourself, you sell off your shares, whatever. So what made you think that you could make a living just cranking out crusts in the mid-90s?
You know, it was interesting. It was really an evolution. We actually started selling to some restaurants, and one of our large competitors beat me out of an account. And they also had a retail brand. And that's really how the Rustic Crust brand came to be. It pushed us to develop a packaging that would make an organic product shelf-stable, and nobody had done it at the time. And that's what happened. We researched. We came up with a way to make this new packaging, and with no preservatives, no chemicals, or no gas. So nothing that, everything in it is edible, and it won't hurt you at all. So that's what we did. And we invented this packaging, and we started going out to grocery stores.
So, as many entrepreneurs do, you just knock on it and just a little FaceTime with all these people until eventually it catches on and you don't have to visit everybody.
You know, it's funny. In the early days, I think I did visit everybody. And even today, I travel all over the country. I spend almost 2/3 of my time out meeting with our customers. I'm out at the events we do. And I actually field phone calls a lot at the office to see, when people have customer, even complaints or positive comments, they come on my desk.
All right, so your I guess, market presence basically is organic and all natural. Is the public finally warming up to organic food? And because it's had the reputation, and rightfully so in many cases, of being a little pricier, so people have stayed away. It's a bad word to them, but it seems like the message is getting through that this is probably a healthier way to eat. Is the public coming along?
Yeah, the public's coming along in several different ways. I mean, the organic movement continues to grow. It's still growing with most products at double digits. The other side of it is the consumer. There's been all this education about GMOs and non-GMO.
And explain what that is for maybe the people.
GMO would be anything that would be a genetically modified organism. And so it really has to do with the intent is to grow better crops and to be resistant to weeds and things. And it's not as much that's hurting everything. It's now more pesticide gets used, more of all these chemicals get used in that process. And that's where a lot of the additional questions are coming in. So there's two sides. You're modifying something that wouldn't normally get that way. It cannot happen without a scientist doing it. It wouldn't happen in nature. And then you have, now that they have this super plant, if you want to call it, you have super weeds that start growing up around it. And so if you look at areas, it's just chemicals. And so when you think of organic, the next step would be organic. Organic is grown with soil that's been certified for a period of time. All of the food that's, if the animals are eating it, it's all the food they're eating is organic. If you're putting things on, they're all approved by the Organic Association. So it's just this awareness and clean labels. People want to, it all comes down to, when we're at an event, whether we're doing an event with a Costco or a Whole Foods, people flip that package over. They want to read the ingredients. They
want
to know what they are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, at least from what my research tells me, is that you're fairly rigorous in making sure that your suppliers are indeed complying with the standards set apart or set forward for this for organic stuff.
So all of our organic suppliers are certified organic by a third party. And then all of our non-GMO, we get certification of their non-GMO products. And then as well, we visit probably a third of our companies every year that sell us products. We'll go all the way back to the source. That includes we've been out in North Dakota at the wheat fields. And it's a long drive from a very small airport, and there's not much around to get there. But we've done that several times. We've done it with our tomatoes. So a lot of our ingredients, we'll go and look at the source. It's just kind of a follow-up to make sure we were there as well.
I like that. In fact, I know that King Arthur flour, I'm a fan of their products, is if it doesn't meet really specific standards for say, milling standards or other content or impurities or whatever, they'll send it back, and they've been known to send back railroad cars filled with product that did not meet their standards. Have you ever had to put something aside that perhaps didn't meet your qualifications?
At least once a year we'll have a load of product that comes in that doesn't meet the standard. Then it's put on hold, and several times we've sent back full trailer trucks, not quite a rail car, but trailer truck worth of product that did not meet the standards that we have in place.
We talked about how you paid your employees during the downtime, which was surprisingly, not that long, actually. It was like 5 weeks or something.
Yeah, the employees were technically out of work for about 5 weeks.
All right. So you have a heart for helping out the community. And when we come back from a break, I want to talk about where the Rustic Crust truck has gone to help people in distress, and one very special trip you took to a place in New Hampshire. So we'll get into that as well. This is Food for Thought, 107.7 WTPL. Brad Sterl of Rustic Crust is our guest, coming back in just a few on WTPL.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Wow. Welcome back. Food for Thought with Carol and Mike, live at the Beacon Building on this really hot summer day. But we can't complain, because remember what it was just a few short months ago.
And everybody what it will was... be a few short months from now.
Okay, you don't have to say that.
Oh, sorry.
but we are in studio with owner and CEO of Rustic Crust Pizza, Brad Sterl. And you were asking him before we went to break.
Yeah. What I love about people like Alex Ray of Common Man, he truly believes in you know, giving, and his employees get a certain amount of time a month to help out with local causes. You have the Rustic Truck Crust, and you have driven it to places where people need some help. I know veterans are near and dear to your heart, and the victims in Hurricane Sandy. So give us a little sampling of where the truck has found its way to help folks that needed a little happiness.
Gosh, we've been everywhere. We were down in South Carolina for a Wounded Warriors event we did at the Citadel.
Was that the Sergeant Dan or whatever?
Yeah, Lieutenant Dan Band.
Right. Yeah.
We've been down at Sandy for the Hurricane Sandy came through. We've gone Pease Air Force Base. We've greeted several groups of the folks coming in. We did an event my head's going blank today, but in Epping for the Lieutenant, Police Sergeant there. And
don't know the name, sorry.
Almost any of the events around that we're looking at.
Oh, yes. Arkell. Thank you.
And so if there's opportunities, we've done fundraisers. We've had a person that had cancer was trying to do a fundraiser. So a lot of places, if we can help out, we'll go out.
So you have your truck, and you actually, it has like a pizza oven in it, and you make pizzas and...
Yes, we have a truck. It has a big wood-fired oven on the back, and we also have a trailer with a wood-fired oven on the back, and we'll show up at events. And so sometimes you'll see us just sampling products for folks, and we've also used it for the fundraisers.
Very nice. Now, isn't there one particular time when you went to help up on top of somewhere?
So we actually brought pizzas to the top of Mount Washington.
I love that.
That was
how'd you keep them hot?
we actually baked them at the top of the mountain. We were going to tow the oven. We had set up to have a skid made to put the oven on a skid.
So this was in winter?
This was in winter, and we used a snowcat to go to the top.
Oh, okay.
My. So,
yeah, that takes a long time, too.
And we opted at the last
3 hours,
minute
right?
To use the ovens at the top because there was some really bad weather conditions.
And they've got a beautiful kitchen up there.
It's amazing.
I mean, it's I don't know if it's a Viking. I can't remember what kind of stove it is, but it's definitely industrial grade.
Yeah, so we fed everybody up there. That was really fun. It was really neat to go up in the wintertime and see what the weather's really like. And you hear about it all the time. So to be there was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's amazing. Why it's a little beehive of activity. You've got the meteorologists who work there, and they have their little rooms, and they have their little common area to watch TV, and then they have this beautiful kitchen and a massive pantry. So I'm trying to get in because they'll take volunteers to cook for a week, but it's like it's not easy to get through. I'm trying to worm my way in because I write for New Hampshire Magazine, so I can do a story on it.
Cool.
And so that's on my bucket list. I don't have a very long bucket list, but that's one of them.
That would be a lot of fun.
So people go up a week at a time?
Yes, they have volunteers. And basically what they do is you can go up during the summer and spend a week. And if you can hack it, if you can hack the isolation and feeding 15 to 20 people, and you do well, then they slot you in during the winter, which is when everybody wants to be there. And so that you kind of have to prove yourself the first time around. I said, oh, I think I can probably do this. So still working on that one.
We'll send pizza for you when you go.
You know what?
There you go.
Let me bring a case of that stuff up, and that'll be one night. That'll be a treat. And I'll say, boy, look at how hard I worked on these crusts. So before we let you go here, because we're almost done, what's so good about doing business in New Hampshire versus another state?
You know, it's just a great place to live. It's a great place to work. And again, I travel all over the country, all over the world, and I always want to come home. So it's a great place to be. Great folks. We have great employees. It's the best place I can think of.
Well, you were in California, I think, for some kind of food event when you got word of the fire. What was that moment like? I mean, it was probably disbelief, sinking pit, and I got to get back, right?
Yeah, it was, I didn't know how to act. Yeah. It was,
April Fool's joke, right?
Yeah. Closest thing to having somebody say, you just lost your child.
Yeah.
Not as bad as that, but it was, my stomach turned inside out, and I was glad nobody got hurt.
Did you have a game plan? Because you had about a five-hour flight back home.
Yeah, my wife got mad at me. The whole flight home, all I did was work, and I was actually ordering equipment for the building, assuming it was going to be gone when I got home.
Yeah.
So I started the process on the flight home.
Wow.
Well, it's a great story, and that part of it has a happy ending. Brad Sterl, founder, president, CEO of Rustic Crust in Pittsfield, employing local people even when they weren't making any money for that short period of time. And good things happen to good people. We can't thank you enough for coming by. And keep working on that big green egg.
Okay.
I need to have a little cooking time with you on that sometime because I got one of those babies.
Do some
It's my boy toy.
Cook-offs.
Yeah.
Thank you for
green
having
egg
me.
Cook-off.
You're very welcome. All right.
All right, you're listening to Food for Thought. We're going to go on a short break, and we'll be back with Steve Freeman, Wake the Health Up America. I can't wait to show him what I have in studio here.
He'll be proud.
I've been not eating them. I've been waiting. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Hello once again, everybody. It's Food for Thought. The show is flying by. We're into our final half hour or so. And it's brought to you by Casey's Rib Shack, famous hickory smoked award-winning Southern Pit Barbecue on 2nd Street in Manchester. You'll find them online, ribshack.net. Also, Mama McDonough's, Irish Pub on Depot Street in Hillsboro. You'll find them on Facebook. All great people who support Food for Thought with Carol and Mike 5 days a week on The Pulse from noon to 2.
There we go. Yeah. And it is Monday, and it is Steve Freeman's slot here, and welcome back to Food for Thought, Wake the Health Up America.
Best title of any of the segments.
I love it. I love saying that, too. Wake the Health Up America. I love it.
Say it with a Howard Stern infusion.
Well, I don't know about that. But so you had a chance to meet Brad, and I think Brad is like-minded as you in terms of local, healthy, when possible, organic ingredients.
I think Brad is an exceptional New Hampshire businessman. The fact that he paid all his employees when there was no money coming in. My former employer got the thing put together really quickly, his new factory. And I am so impressed with his ingredients. Every time I look at the packaging, I'm like, I cannot believe this is all organic awesomeness in a package. And it's one of the very few packaged products that I put into my diet. And we will proudly sell his products at the Manchester Food Co-op. We can't wait to. And actually, on the subject of the food truck, which we're going to be talking about a lot more, we could, if he doesn't want to make pizzas to order, we'll make them on the food co-op truck, and it's all local ingredients. And here's an example of how awesome they are.
Well, I know that you, when you talked to us about the food truck last week, you said it would not be a truck that's selling, you know, food that you're preparing there. But is that something that you could do easily enough that in addition to local farmers' products, you could do pizzas or no?
You know, we're meeting with the health department Thursday at our kickoff meeting. The two officials. The plot thickens. so I don't know the answer to that off topic, but just talking to him right now, the wheels started spinning. I'm like, we could probably do pizzas. For some reason, maybe. So I'll find that out. But the pizzas are quick and easy. They're all prepackaged. We just put some fresh ingredients on top. So we'll ask the health department what sort of licensing. And as the co-op truck evolves, I think we're gearing up more towards when the store opens and we have a licensed kitchen, et cetera. Then we will start using it as a true food truck where you're preparing foods to order, as well as selling a portion of the store's offerings remotely or mobile.
Cool. Well, do you see what Carol is eating today?
Yes.
It is so good.
You can tell just by looking at them, the shape of them.
Tomatoes for those.
The color of them.
Yeah. It was a nice beef steak. And like I told Mike earlier, it's been sitting out on my counter.
Yeah.
And I never used to do that. Yeah. So, you know, and Daryl went to go put, you know, I'm like, no, this stays right here. Steve says it stays on the counter.
It
potatoes
does.
And onions, too.
And
right?
I've actually noticed at CMC the boxes of tomatoes, and it now says on tomato boxes, please do not refrigerate. And so you really shouldn't, except when you cut into it, then you got to question how quickly. But obviously those won't be here much longer.
No, they won't. They definitely. I've been waiting to eat them before you came. Steve has to see this plate.
And thank
of
you
my
for
tomatoes.
Sharing. And again, enjoy them while they are here, local and abundant, because those are the flavors you truly cherish from your childhood, from your whole life. You cannot get that anywhere else in the world except in your backyard.
It's true.
That flavor, that texture.
Yes, and I've been just counting down the days until the peaches are ready at Max Orchards in Londonderry, and sure enough, I went Saturday and scored a bunch of them, and all except one are gone because they're huge, they're soft, they're ripe, and you cannot get them in any grocery store in that condition. Even this time of year, I'm surprised at how many hard peaches are still in the local grocery stores.
Yeah,
it's embarrassing.
Because they're from 6,000 miles away from another continent.
And they're designed to withstand bruising and stuff, right?
Correct. They're designed for shipping and refrigeration. They're not designed for picking and eating, which is what local food is. And on that note, we were talking about peaches. I cooked with peaches over the weekend, and a friend of mine said, you know, local peaches, the pit always comes out clean.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yeah, you're right, because they're cooked. I mean, they're grown and picked when they're perfectly ripe. They're not grown 12 days premature and then gassed up to ripen along while they're being transported. So that's another thing in local peaches, you know.
Yeah. Do you I cut mine in half just and kind of circle it around like I'm doing an avocado and pull the pit out, because otherwise I got to wear a bib. Because they're so juicy.
You do have to wear a bib.
It's a little, not as sloppy to do it that way.
Yeah, I follow my father's pattern where I suck on the pit for like half an hour after, like hard candy.
Is that right?
Until it's stripped completely clear of every last piece of fiber. And it's great because it's kind of supplants chewing gum or, you know, something else. So and actually, if you can crack it, there's an edible pit inside.
The actual seed, you mean the
meat? Yeah, it's like a fat pumpkin seed,
right.
And it has a totally different flavor, but still good.
Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Inside the pit, there's a fat little plump soft seed, and it's delicious, and it's a very, you know, you only get one per peach, so it's a very limited edition.
Do you ever get two, like sometimes you get a double yolked egg?
No, like tangerines and oranges have babies on the outside, always call them. Yeah, no, not on peaches. That's my favorite part of oranges, when there's like, I don't know what it is, if it's another orange growing on top of it, but you open it up, it's like, oh, this one's got babies. That's what I was taught as a child, so I love them. And they're sweeter because they're smaller.
Steve, we need to have that talk because there's a few things you don't know, I think.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, okay, are we talking about corn today?
Blame it on the bees.
Yeah, blame it on the bees.
Over-pollination.
Thank you, bees.
We're talking about corn because corn is local and fresh right now. It's coming off the fields today.
So it is now. It's good right
now. It is, yes.
Okay.
And I actually did a little bit of research online, for whatever that's worth, that they do suggest you can eat raw corn, and some people prefer the flavor of just eating the cob raw. The most important thing, a couple things I want to talk about with corn, because corn gets a lot of attention because a lot of corn is grown for feed, which we'll talk about in a minute. But when you get corn and it's fresh and local, you want to try and eat it tonight. You don't buy corn on Wednesday to cook to take out to the beach for the weekend on Saturday. Because as soon as, theoretically, you kill the plant, when you harvest it, you've cut off its water supply. So now the plant is changing its survival mode, and now it's taking all the sugars and converting them to starches. So if you eat corn and it's not that good, throw it out. And if it's not fresh, it's never going to be those sharp, snappy crystals that just, or kernels, excuse me, that pop when you bite, when you eat them. And that's the best, freshest corn. Most corn we get when it's not fresh and local was picked premature, gassed up in the truck on its 10-day drive sort of thing. And just, it again, it doesn't compare to what local flavor tastes like. So buy corn, plan on eating it. Just think of corn as fish. You don't buy fish on Wednesday to cook Saturday. Buy corn, eat it that day, because that, more than any other type of plant, is quickly converting what is sweet and delicious into its own survival protection mode and robbing us of the flavor of the corn.
Interesting. I interviewed somebody from the Food Network, and I can't think of Sarah Moulton. That's who it is, Chef Sarah Moulton. And she does a couple shows on Food Network, and she was telling me she grew up in, her family had a family, like, collectively had a little farm in western Massachusetts, and when it was time to pick the corn, they would literally go out, grab it, somebody would be getting the pot boiling in the house, and they would literally run back to the house, to Steve's point about eating it now. And I thought, really? But, you know, what you're saying, the way it changes over and the flavor profile tastes, now I get it, what she was talking about.
Yeah,
right.
Makes sense.
And I did, yeah, see, I did see a few references to that online, that there were people, old farmer stories, get the, yeah, pot boiling, I'm going to pick the corn.
Isn't that interesting? So, I love the fish analogy, too.
Yeah, and a lot of people, you know, do grocery shopping once a week. I don't blame them. You got families. Nobody has extra time these days. I enjoy going shopping. I enjoy the experience, and I enjoy, more than anything, fresh, real food. So if I buy corn at the farmer's market in Manchester on Thursday, it's dinner Thursday night. Mm-hmm. There's no exception in my book for my personal preference. And corn, actually, there's lots of rumors about corn. Your body can't process it, et cetera, et cetera. There's no vitamins. That's not true. There are vitamins and nutrients that are available in corn that are good for you. There's a lot of fiber in it. And the insoluble fiber is actually good because it's sort of a cleansing agent. So that is a good thing to eat corn. And it does have sugar, about the same amount as a banana. And again, like a banana, most bananas are picked very green. There's actually a special gas that's used for bananas. And bananas are actually used in produce companies. They put them in with other fruit to ripen them because of the off gases of banana. So they have a sort of a second life, these bananas. So again, the message is buy local corn wherever you see it, farm stand, farmer's market, any local co-op, and plan on eating that corn that night. And to that subject, everything, you know, I was thinking about the flour industry, and it's a very large industry. They grow it specifically to kill it, to present it as a beautiful thing that, you know, is losing its life as it's presented, unfortunately. Nothing against the flour industry. Everyone should get fresh flowers. But every food we eat has been taken from its life supply. So as soon as it's taken from its life supply, it's lost its source to water, its source to the minerals of the soil. So it is starting to die as soon as it's taken from the tree. And you think about something fresh and local that is grown for flavor and texture, as opposed to something that's grown for shipping and handling. And if it's cut 15 days early or 10 days early, it's lost that. Think about a baby. How much a baby grows in the last month or 6 weeks of its life before it's born. That's what fruit and vegetables are. They get all their maximum stuff in the last couple of weeks of their gestation or whatever it's called. So fresh and local, you're getting all that. All this other imported fruits and vegetables, you're losing all that. It's staying in the tree for the next.
Now, does this analogy apply to the baby tangerines as well?
Well, I think it does, yeah. Yeah, I do. I just want to point this out. I've always said, you know, olive oil you can't get locally, except in California. And I just noticed on the shelf this weekend that there's actually Texas olive oil now. So there's two states in America that produce olive oil.
Well, so you need, what do you need? Sort of somewhat of an arid climate or certain soil types? Because obviously Italy and Greece are where we would think, yeah, of olive oil coming from. So do those states somewhat mimic the conditions in Europe?
Exactly, and the long, warm temperatures, which obviously we don't have here. But I was just impressed, and I was like, oh, now Texas.
How'd you know? Is there some kind of branding on there that says, you know, straight from Texas? Or
anything from Texas says from Texas.
Yeah, that's true. That's
one thing that they're never going to give up, that labeling. If it's from Texas, it says from Texas. Yeah, I saw a thing from Texas, and it was at this great big olive oil display, and I picked it up. I was like, that's great. I've always thought it was just California that produces olives, but Texas does also.
So why? Well, I guess the advantage is that it's in this country, so you're keeping jobs locally. But it's such an inert material. It seems like if you get it from overseas, it's probably not going to deteriorate. But I'll defer to you on that.
That could be a one-hour segment. Olive oil is a very corrupt industry. Most olive oil that you purchase at the store is cut. It's kind of like the mafia handled thing.
Whoa! Breaking news, ladies and gentlemen.
In the European countries. There's a lot of corruption in it. There's very little enforcement. So I always buy oil from a reputable distributor. And there's a young man in Manchester who's a direct importer who we will be selling at the co-op as well. There's a book out there. I want to say 50 Shades of Olive Oil, but that's not what it's called. But it has some sort of title like that.
Oh, Steve.
And it talks about how corrupt the olive oil industry is. And most things you think you're getting extra virgin or virgin olive oil, there's no sort of official program to classify that. So you buy from a reputable distributor.
We used to have on here a sponsor. Do you know Celeste Oliva in Concord?
Yep.
That olive oil?
Yep.
She used to be on, and she taught me quite a few things about olive oil. And that is true. You don't buy it at the grocery store. Yicky, yicky, yicky.
No. Hmm. There's a lot of olive oil boutiques opening up across America.
You see that a lot.
Tastings and everything. I've seen that.
Yeah, and they treat it like wine, and that's how they treat it over there. You know, we slather it on everything, and I no longer cook with olive oil because of everything I've read. And when you start really appreciating olive oil for what it really was intended for, or what it's best as, I should say. And I have about 15 bottles at home, and I do tastings at home for friends and whatnot. And when you drink it like a shot of wine or whiskey, and it's just what a diversity of flavor. You can taste the highlands. You can taste the grassiness. You can taste the – like scotch. Like scotch has all these – everyone loves a scotch tasting, right? Same thing with olive oil. You can taste the region it's from. And once you do that, once you go to an olive oil tasting and have a great sensation with real great olive oil – next time you go to the restaurant and dip your bread in the oil, you can taste most olive oil that is served to us is rancid.
We did a tasting right here live on the show with, you know, olive oil that, you know, most people eat, you know, you consume, and like Celeste Oliva's. And it is crazy the difference when it's actually, you're sipping it and you know, it's crazy.
And it's so
good. You are so right. It is so good.
Like a cordial. It is delicious.
I can't wrap my head around sipping it like a cordial.
Oh, it's very good for you.
Well, that I get. But I love having you on, but then you also make me not want to eat a lot of stuff because, you know, you're educating us on the reality.
He's putting us in the right direction.
I want you to go out of your way to take care of the temple your Savior gave you. I want people to take better care of their bodies, period. And the best way to do that is to seek out the best foods you can.
Now, the local man that you said has olive oil around here, where can you get his olive oil around here?
You can get it at manchesterfood.coop. It's one of the few shelf-stable foods we're selling right now. You can get it at Angela's Pasta Shop. You can get it at the Fresh Market.
What is the name of it?
Los 200. 200.
English, please.
Las 200.
The two something, right?
200 is always on the side of the bottle. Okay. Go to the manchesterfood.coop webpage. You can click on our store to get more information because I just took it from their website, Great Photography. And so they make an arbequina and a piquois. And, you know, he's harvesting right now, which we'll get next spring. And he's nice enough, Matthew, to give me a couple of special edition bottles, which is a very small grove in Chile. And, wow, you know, just when I love those two oils, Republic uses their oil. He gave me that special edition stuff, and I drink a shot of it. It's just so good. I'm like, I feel no guilt drinking it. It is so good. It's better, and it's better for your body than alcohol, so that's my go-to.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
See, now you're really bumming me out. We better take a break here because I'm going to kill myself.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to bring us to break.
Say what?
Right. So you're listening to Food for Thought. We're going to go on a short break. We'll be right back.
It is Food for Thought at 152. Carol Lawrence and Mike Morin at 1077 WTPL. And we are a service of Fallon's Furniture, official decorator of the Green Room of Food for Thought and Kale & Company. Kale & Company getting underway after the top of the hour. And Integrity Health Coaching Solutions, Bedford and Londonderry, integrityfit.com. Finally, Red Arrow Diners of Manchester, Milford, and the latest in the collection, got a drive-through window in Londonderry, right off of 93 Exit 5, and that is redarrowdiner.com online.
There you go. So, Steve, we are in studio with Steve Freeman, Wake the Health Up America. We're talking just fresh foods and in-season foods and corn, and I think you had a few more things to say about corn.
Yes, thank you. Just wanted to point out that cooking corn, you can eat it raw. Certainly encourage you to eat any corn you can when it's fresh and local. But when you cook it, it actually increases its anti-cancer effects, which is good for all of us. And I believe that cancer exists in us all. It's whether you feed it or not that it will develop in your body. And whether you feed it depends on whether you eat fresh and local all the time or toxic, preserved, and bagged. So the more fresh local food, the better you're building up your immunity to live a long, healthy life and not suffer any of the ailments that are popular today.
I've never had raw corn.
I never have either.
I've tried it.
How different is the taste?
It's sweet. It's a different sort of, you know, when it's fresh picked and you boil it, it pops. It doesn't have that pop because the water didn't sort of saturate the fibers of it. And you can't clean the cob clean when you eat it raw, because it wasn't boiled or steamed to release it from the cob itself. Give it a try.
Yeah. What is your favorite way of cooking corn when you get corn? Do you simply steam it, boil it?
I put it in water for about 20 minutes, and then I grill it in the husk. That's my favorite way.
There you go.
By far. Because it gives it a smoky, charred, and the best
so
thing...
So in the husk.
In the husk.
So soak it in the water.
Yeah, soak
don't,
it in the water.
Don't peel it. Right.
And cut the whiskers off, or the beard, whatever it's called. Soak it in the water for about 20 minutes or all day if you want to. And then, so if you ask me how to cook corn right now, boil it, I don't know, 9 minutes, 12 minutes, 15?
Yeah, I don't know.
I know on the grill, when it's charred on all four sides, it's done.
So not too long then, probably.
So probably like 10 minutes on the grill, and you just flip it four times.
All right, do you do butter?
Yeah, I've been trying different kinds of spicy butters. Like cayenne, a little cayenne pepper, a little heat with the sweet of butter.
That sounds good.
Is absolutely delicious. Little Texas barbecue rubs, things of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've peeled it and put it like in tinfoil and made like some butter like that with, Cajun seasonings in it. Actually, Healthy Solution spice blends mixed with some butter would be really good. And then spread it on and wrap it in tinfoil and cook it on the grill that way. I've done that.
You can do that. Yeah. That's a great way.
But in the husk.
In the husk. And so when corn is fresh and delicious, it, in my opinion, it doesn't need anything. Sure. And I like it straight like that when it's so good. But butter and salt always makes it taste better, so sometimes it's hard to avoid that.
But like you said, to get that spicy in there too.
But when it's fresh and delicious, it's so good, sometimes it just eat it. And that's one of those things you can eat 3-4 of them and not feel guilty. It's about
my mother
130 calories per cob.
Right. My mother, when I think of corn on the cob, all I think of is my mother, because she absolutely loves corn on the cob. And when she comes over and we're having corn, you have to allot at least 4 to 5 ears just for my mother. And she sits there and all you hear is I mean, it is hilarious. I should video it when I have her over, because I'm telling you, it is.
Please do.
I will.
It's a fun food to eat, actually.
It is.
You can make designs in it and stuff if you can. Don't have much time on
your hands. Some people like to go horizontal. Some people like to rotate it all the way.
No, my mother goes straight across. I go like that.
Really?
Yeah. I do.
It's like the which way do you do your toilet paper kind of thing. There's big discussion on that. All right, so how do you eat yours, Steve?
Like a typewriter.
Yeah, as
and
do I.
And I make the sound when I return.
I think he got confused. He didn't know if you were talking about the toilet
over,
paper or not.
Over. It's got to be over.
Over. That is exactly
under waste more.
Oh, it does?
To me, it does, because it continues to roll. They're just physics something. God.
Wow.
Does it even matter? Does it matter to you, Mike?
It doesn't matter, but I'm more comfortable over the top. We all have our comfort zone. Yeah. And
I have no comfort zone on it. I don't even think about it when I put it on,
don't
but
you?
Daryl switches it all the time.
Well, there you go.
That's
like,
how they,
really?
In a hotel, how they fold over an ear to make it a pretty presentation. It's always over the top.
Right.
That's the way some engineer designed it back in the day when they designed an engineered toilet paper.
And I do the little fold thing too for Barbara, when she comes home.
Come on.
Brownie points.
It's a nice treat, isn't it? It's like coming home to a bed that's made. It's beautiful.
Yeah, and I always put a Lindt chocolate on her pillow.
Wow.
Usually with a bite out of it. But
that's all right. She knows your taste test,
nice.
Right?
That's right. Well, I have to taste your food to make sure nobody is poisoning her.
Of course.
It's what a guy does. Yeah. Sure.
So when you do buy your fresh corn, the best way to store it is obviously in your refrigerator for 3 to 6 hours, then cook it.
Okay. But you can leave it out, right? Do you need to refrigerate it? Or does that
If you're going to cook it that day, I'd say you're fine to keep it out on the counter. Right. But otherwise, do refrigerate it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And types of corn, what's the... It's the bread and butter or the salt and pepper or what the couple of the varieties?
Oh, butter and sugar. I'm not a corn expert, but my favorite has always been, I think they call it butter and sugar.
Butter and sugar,
That has the white and yellow kernels
and yellow
together.
Like
that a fairly new version or hybrid? I don't remember that as a kid. I just remember all one color.
I remember as a kid, we waited all summer long until the corn was ready at Clark's Farm.
Oh, I live right next door.
And... You know, again, it goes back to that local thing. You couldn't – people would wait in line for hours. I think they had a limit even back in the 70s. And it was worth the wait. And you had like 6 weeks to eat corn, and that was it.
Yeah,
And you didn't buy it from the store. You didn't buy it from Florida or Virginia. You only bought it at Clark's Farm as a kid. So we're leaving now.
We're leaving.
So all our information about our food truck is on our website, manchesterfood.coop. Follow us on Facebook. We have a kickoff event this Thursday night here in the Mill Yard. All public and members of the co-op are invited to attend because together we're going to make this happen.
I can't wait. Thank you, Steve Freeman. Wake the Health Up America. Great segment again, Steve. Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, Kale and Company and Food for Thought. We'll see everybody tomorrow. Bye.